So you felt like.
Welcome to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio, your one stop for creative inspiration. We have a terrific hour of ideas and tips for you today, so let's get to it. Here's your host, Pat Sloan.
Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm Pat Sloan, and I'm really excited to be here. This is a beautiful day here in Virginia where I am, and I am talking to three fantastic quilters about all kinds of interesting topics on the show today. The first one that I'm going to be chatting with is Jenny Baker of In Color Order. That's her site. She has just a great site where she does a lot of sharing about quilting. Her writing is creative. She has patterns and tutorials, and she's a fabric designer. So I thought it'd be really great to find out a little bit about what goes on behind the scenes in Color Order and how she goes about, creating this really great fabric that she has now. Hi, Jenny. How are you?
Hi. How are you?
I am great. I'm so excited to have you on the show.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
So, Jenny, how did you discover quilting? How did that happen for you?
Well, I really didn't think that much about quilting until I was moving into my first apartment, and I happened to see just a plain patchwork square quilt in a magazine, and for some reason it stuck with me, and I thought, I have to have this. And as a college student, of course, I had no money, so I couldn't buy one, but I decided, well, I'm going to make it. And I made my first quilt, and then I made my second quilt, and it was like there was nothing in my mind ever said, like, okay, stop, like, you're done. And so, I just kept on going, and I actually happened to have, my grandmother quilted, my great-grandmother quilted, my great-great-grandmother quilted, so it's in my blood, too. So I think it was, bound to happen eventually.
Right, so you had access to the sort of, maybe you didn't ask them for advice, but you had seen quilts and, sort of they were part of your history.
Yeah, and my mom always sewed, and I mean, I remember her making things for my American Girl doll. So she had a sewing machine, and I was always, welcome to experiment and, test my strength, so.
Did you have sewing in school?
Not on a machine. I remember making, kind of a little cube pillow in home ec, and that was about it. There really was not a big push.
Big push for sewing, yeah. It sort of goes in ebbs and flows, so I'm always kind of curious. And at one point, you like my first quilt did not inspire me to continue quilting, but you just kept making quilts, and eventually you found out about blogging and sort of put yourself out there. How did that happen?
Well, I actually, blogging was kind of came before the quilting. I was starting my first website when I was in sixth grade.
Oh my gosh.
So I did that first. That was my first hobby, was to, blog basically. It wasn't really called blogging then, but it was always something that I was interested in. And so then when I started to quilt, it was like, oh, well, I want to share what I'm making. Mm-hmm. And so then I started the blog that I have now, and it was just, I don't know, it's just naturally gone hand in hand for me. I can't imagine doing one without the other anymore.
Oh, yeah, I know. It's like instant show and tell, just sort
exactly.
of like having buddies in the room.
Exactly. It's so hard to find other people who enjoy the same things that you do. And I feel like with blogging, it's kind of cheating. It's like you're automatically getting access to all these people who have the exact same interests as you and who are excited about what, you're doing. And, you can just connect and interact in a way that you can't always find locally, wherever you're at.
Right, and people's lives are different schedules, and that's why I think, sharing online is so fabulous, because it's just
absolutely
any time that works for your schedule, you can get on there.
Well, and then if you move, that was the biggest thing for me. We made a huge move about 2 years ago, and it was so nice to know, okay, well, I'm not really going to lose many of my quilting friends because they're all on the internet. I can reach them wherever they're at.
Right. You just get online, just sign on.
Yeah.
There they are. So, at one point, do you have a background in art? Because, you're designing fabric now. Did you take art in school?
I did. My main degree is in marketing, but I did minor in studio art. Okay. It was always something that I was interested in. I mean, I was always, you know, making mud pies or, you know, friendship bracelets or, you know, magazine collages. So I've always had that desire to, you know, be creative. So it definitely helped. It definitely helped when it came time to design the fabric to have a little bit of that background.
A little bit, yeah. So that you know, it's sort of daunting. You know, it's designing fabric isn't like making a quilt. It's a whole different process.
It really is.
Yeah. So what did you do when you – tell me a little bit about what your line looks like, the one that's available right now in the stores.
Well, it's very cheerful, a lot of bright kind of primary colors. I took a lot of inspiration from classic mid-century modern design, so I collect a lot of kitchenware and stuff, so that was kind of my jumping off point. A lot of clean lines, pretty mod looking. It was a lot of fun. It really was.
So it's called Color Me Retro with Art Gallery.
Yeah.
So
it was an adventure.
Yeah, when you went about, you know, you collected things, you know, did you come up with a color palette first, or did you have some sketches and you were like, oh my gosh, this would be really good in fabric? What did you do?
Well, I'm honestly not a natural drawer. So when I first sat down to start to do it, I was paralyzed. Like, my sketching is just terrible. Like, it really is. And it wasn't until I really just sat down on the computer and just started messing around on the computer with a Wacom tablet, a digital tablet, and just started to play around with different shapes and stuff like that. And then I started to feel a little bit more comfortable. We came up with the designs first and then kind of found the color palette to go with it. But I worked kind of the opposite way on my next collection, so I don't know what will be my steadfast, process. I'm totally still learning.
I think, Jenny, for some of us, it changes every time because it depends on what kicks off the idea. You know, it might be you start with a flower, and the next time it might be you start with a color. You know, it's
exactly.
I like the red in your line.
Heard from so many people, I want red. Like, it's hard to find really good reds. And so I knew that had to be in there.
Did it come from pottery or some of your collecting? Did you have a particular piece that you wanted to duplicate the shade?
Yeah, I think especially the colors, the main inspiration for the colors was I collect a certain type of enamelware. So it's metal that's coated with enamel, bowls, plates, teapots is called Catherine Holm enamelware. Okay. It was made in Norway from about the early 50s into the 60s, I think. It's fantastic. I can't get enough of it. I have too many pieces already, and I just can't stop myself. It's really bold, really bright colors. It's gorgeous.
Now we're all going to be out there looking for it. What was it called again?
I know. Every time I see like a picture of it in a magazine or something, I'm like, oh no, more people are going to know about it.
Do you use it? Do you use your collection?
Don't go out collecting it. I'm sorry.
Do you use your collection at home, or do you just sit it?
No, I collect vintage Pyrex too, and I use most of that. But the enamelware, it's so much more fragile. That I'm a little afraid, and it's not nonstick either, so I'm afraid that everything is just going to stick like crazy to it.
Yeah, and it would get all icky then afterwards.
So
I want to tell people that they can look at your fabric on your website. You're so organized. I just am in awe of your organization. So you can go to incolororder, that's all one word, .com, and she has a button at the top that says, on the toolbar, that says fabric. And she's got all her posts. Jenny, you just did such a great job. All your posts about your fabric, places they can find it to buy. That's great.
Thanks. Well, I think coming from being a blogger first, I know what I wanted from fabric designers when I was just a blogger. And so I'm just trying to, I guess, you know, give that back because I can't expect those things from someone else if I'm not willing to do them myself.
It is a good way to think about what you're looking for when you go to someone's site that you want to Yeah, so that's really, really cool. Now, you have a bunch of really nice tutorials. Tell me a bit about what, do you do that often, or do you just sort of like once a year? How often do you write a tutorial?
I usually aim for at least once a month.
Okay.
I didn't do quite as many last year because I also did a block of the month. So that kind of, I got away with just doing that some months. But I learned to sew and quilt almost exclusively from tutorials that I found online. And so I feel like it's just, you know, I got to pay it back in mm-hmm. some way. And so that's, you know, and it's just fun.
Yeah.
I mean,
oh, yeah, it
work,
is.
But it's fun.
you get so much instant feedback.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
And it's so, there's nothing better than seeing, you know, things that people have made from your tutorials or from your patterns or from your fabric. It's just, I don't know. It's hard to describe.
And you also have a pattern line, so people can go, and at the top it says pattern, so they can click
yeah.
and see your pattern line.
Mm-hmm.
I'm always curious what people look for when they go looking at quilts. Like when you go to a quilt show, what draws your eye?
First of all, antique quilts. If I'm at a show, if I'm in an antique shop, if there is a vintage quilt, I can't stay away from it. I have to see it. But beyond that, I really like to look at quilts that have really precise piecing because mm-hmm. I am not a perfectionist at all. So mm-hmm. I would say that's my like worst skill, I guess you could say. So when I see something that's really, really, you know, requires really precise piecing, I'm just amazed.
Yeah, I am too. It's like, that's, you know, I'm like, oh, the points are chopped off on mine. That's okay.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. Well,
so then
my philosophy is if it was perfect, I would go buy it at Target.
Right.
It's handmade. It's supposed to be handmade. But,
right.
you know, at the same time, some of those quilts are just mind-boggling how, you know, there's not a single point chopped off or it doesn't even seem like a single stitch is out of place. And that's so cool to me.
Yeah, it's incredible. Well, you know, Jenny, this has been so great. I do have to tell people they have to visit your site in color order, and they have to meet George the Bunny. Yes,
yep.
And visit all your other things. So thank you so much for being on.
Thank you for having me.
This is American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. This is Pat Sloan, and we are going to take a little break. And when we come back, I have Heather Jones on the show.
Ready for a new project? Choose from hundreds of free patterns in the Projects and Ideas section of our website, allpeoplequilt.com.
Hi, I'm Jennifer Keltner, Executive Editor of American Patchwork and Quilting, and I'd like to invite you to join me in making a pillowcase and making a difference. It's easy. Make and donate pillowcases in your local community. Use your favorite pattern or choose from one of the free patterns at allpeoplequilt.com. Whether you sew pillowcases with a group or by yourself, you can help someone less fortunate. You could donate them to a women's shelter, boys or girls club, homeless shelter, veterans home, or any other organization you know of in need. Once you donate the pillowcases, log on to allpeoplequilt.com. Click on the box in the upper right-hand corner for the 1 million pillowcase challenge and enter the number of pillowcases you created to our national tally. We know quilting changes everything. And we're out to show the world just how much quilters care. Please join the American Patchwork and Quilting 1 Million Pillowcase Challenge. We're counting on you.
Welcome to the Spring 2012 Moda Fabrics Fashion Show. We've got a great lineup for you today. Entering with the Spin, Twirl by Me and My Sister Designs brings a playful and fun vibe to the runway. Oh, hello, Luscious by Basic Gray. You looking good, girl. Up next, Reunion by Sweetwater offers a fresh take on navy by pairing it with gray and happy shades of green, yellow, and red. Look who's coming now. It's the Berenstain Bears, a childhood favorite. Stay tuned for more runway reporting and visit your local quilt shop to see these fashionable lines and more from Moda Fabrics.
Get quilting tips and instructions for web-exclusive projects free every week, delivered to your inbox. Sign up today for your free weekly e-newsletter at allpeoplequilt.com.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. Designer Heather Jones is here. She has a site called oliveandollie.com. And Heather's works in a modern style. It's become really her signature. You can start, I can pretty much look at quilts now and I think Heather may have done that. So it's been really fun to sort of watch her progress and see her work as she's gone into new things. She's also teaching some online workshop she's going to tell us about, and has a few other really fun projects. And of course, I have to be saying happy birthday to Heather, because she chose to come on the show on her birthday. Hi, Heather.
Hi, how are you?
I am good. Has it been a great birthday so far?
It has. It's been a little hectic running around doing all sorts of stuff, but yeah, it's been really good.
Oh, you have been busy in general. You have just been making a lot of quilts, doing a lot of events. So how's that going for you?
Yeah, it's been really busy. It's been really fun. It's really exciting, and I'm really honored and grateful to have had the opportunities that I've had. And, you know, sometimes things happen and they lead to other things, and you just kind of run with it.
You know, your quilt, one of your quilts has been in the Coats and Clarks thread advertisements recently, and at the shows they have like these great big blow ups of your, and then sometimes your real quilt. Tell me a little bit about that quilt. It's fantastic.
Yeah, thank you. That was my Around the World quilt, and my friends at Coats and Clarks approached me last summer to create a quilt for their fall booth at Fall Quilt Market. And so I wanted to design something that was really simple, you know, approachable for first-time quilters or a quick project for more advanced people. But, you know, even though it's simple, it has a really kind of stunning graphic quality to it. So I came up with this pattern. They gave me a palette to work with. So I came up with this design for them, and they were really happy with it and used it in a lot of their advertising throughout the fall and winter. So it's been really fun to see that quilt pop up at a lot of different places.
And is it a lap size? It's a pretty big quilt for...
Yeah, it's larger than a quilt for like a baby or child, but it's not a huge quilt. So again, it's an approachable size, but it's not, and it's useful too. It's a useful size. So, but it's not so huge that, you know, you might be a little intimidated to try it if it were, you know, one of your first projects that you wanted to make.
So do you do all your own photography?
For that quilt? I do a lot of my own. I do most of my own photography. For that quilt though, that was photographed by a quilter from North Carolina, where Coats and Clarks is headquartered at. So they worked with someone, and she got some beautiful shots of that. They went to an old farm, which I just love, and they hung it up on the side of a barn, which it turned out really great.
Yeah, people can see this quilt by going to your site, oliveandollie.com. It's all one word, and go to Quilts Plus More on the toolbar. You can see the quilt hanging there. So how did you start to evolve into this particular style? Did you start out making quilts that have this sort of minimalist style to them?
Because I didn't start out as a quilter. So, my background is in more fine art. Painting and drawing was, they were my first love. And they, are still an important part of my life, although I don't really do them as much as I would like to. But I have to say, I think this big influence in a minimal style probably comes from my husband, who's a painter. He's a minimalist painter. And, I've known him for 13, 14 years. So his work has really started, his work has influenced my work. And I think that's where I draw a lot of inspiration from. He's just kind of taught me to look at the world in a different way, and sometimes less is more. And I like to translate that into my quilt designs.
And I really like also, Heather, how you have big shapes. They're bold, and they you're right now you're losing a bit more solids, what I'd say, or tonals than patterned fabric. Mm-hmm. So your quilting has to really enhance that, doesn't it?
It does. And I also think, I think I'm drawn to using more solid fabrics than prints because I feel like I have more control over the final design. Does that make sense? Instead of relying on a patterned fabric, although, I love gorgeous patterns too. It's just, right now I like to kind of have that design control where, I'm responsible for putting these two or three or four or however many colors together. I'm not necessarily choosing colors based on another fabric that I'm using.
And are you looking at those, because you have a painter's background, do you look at the solids like a pool of paint? I mean, do you sort of wish you could mix them up sometimes, get the exact color you want?
Yeah, that would be fun, wouldn't it? I know that opens up a whole another series of projects, making your own colors. That would be really fun. With all of the, available solids out there today, with brands, Moda has their gorgeous Bellas. You've got the beautiful Kona Cotton. Free Spirit has beautiful colors. Everyone has these really gorgeous saturated colors that, or even, not so saturated colors. Mm-hmm. You can almost find anything that you want. So I typically use different companies and just, I choose the colors that I want based on, kind of what I'm thinking about in my design.
And do you actually have like a whole wall of fabric, in the solids? Like, do you have them like in color tones, or do you sort of go buy what you need when you need it?
I have a lot, but I own more prints than solids because I tend to use up all my solids more than I use my prints. So I have some, but if I'm looking for something particular, I'll go out and buy it. Yeah. I keep color cards from all the, the big companies with the solids, and I use those a lot. And combine them with paint chips from like the hardware store when I'm designing. So use that as kind of the starting off point.
Oh, that's a really good idea to have the cards and paint chips so that you sort of have this mix of things that you can look at. So tell me a little bit about some of the teaching that you're doing. You were just teaching in Cincinnati, right? Or is that coming up?
It's this week,
This week.
Well, festival this week, I'm teaching four classes, which is really exciting. So I'm teaching a strip piecing class, I'm teaching a color theory class, which is full, an improvisational class, and then a class on finishing and binding quilts. And then I'm also teaching at the Makery in Boulder, Colorado next week, which is really exciting with a lot of fun people. Yeah, and then I've done online workshops too recently with Creative Bug. So it's really nice to be able to offer that to people who are not able to travel in the areas where I might be teaching. So it's a nice way to, offer things to them as well.
Yeah, so tell me about your online workshop, because, that one will be available to the most people. What's it about?
Yeah, I have one on Creative Bug right now. There are a few more in the works. Mm-hmm. But the one I have now is a modern style quilt. And it's a really simple, approachable project, but it has a lot of bang for your buck, because even though it's really easy to construct, the finished project is really complex looking. Mm-hmm. And I think that's great for both beginners, but also people who are more, advanced quilters who are looking to do something different, or a quicker project for them.
Right, right. Oh, neat. So what is your process, just a little bit, a peek into your brain, Heather. What is your process to start a quilt? What kind of kicks it off?
Typically, it works, I think, one of two ways. If I sit down and try to just design, I always start with a sketchbook. I start with pencil, and I like graph paper sketchbooks, and I draw up some sketches and work through it that way, figure out the math, use the graph paper to calculate pieces of or sizes of the pieces. Mm-hmm. But then also I'm often inspired by really kind of non-traditional things. Mm-hmm. And sometimes something just catches my eye, and I rely heavily on my iPhone camera and take photographs. I take a lot of pictures. And then what I'll do is, you know, refer back to those photographs and then develop sketches and designs based on those in my sketchbook. But it's always a sketchbook. And I, you know, maybe that is, you know, a reference back to my fine art background. I don't know. I love sketchbooks.
And are you organized? I mean, do you have like one book and you go page by page? Or are you like me with about 18 books and notepads and, you know, envelopes? Oops. Well, for some reason, we just lost Heather there right at the end. Oh, darn. So we know that she has notepads, and since we are almost done with this segment, what I'm going to do is just tell you a little bit more about her work. If we can get her back on, then we can say goodbye and happy birthday to her again. But if you are going out to Heather's blog, you can go and see some of the quilts that she's done recently. She has on her top bar her press and publications. She also has tutorials, so you can go and do a great scarf that she's done, has some other quilts. The one quilt around the world that we were talking about, that's a tutorial on her site. So I think maybe we have Heather back. No, didn't work. So look for Heather's class out at creativebug.com. Maybe you want to try her workshop out there. We're going to take a little break. This is Pat Sloan. We'll be right back.
Looking for fresh, simple, and fun projects and ideas? Check out the current issue of Quilts & More magazine at your local quilt shop or on newsstands.
Make the most of your sewing machine by watching Machine Minute videos brought to you by Babylock. Learn about popular topics like tension troubles, stitch length, needles, buttonholes, zipper basics, and more. Watch these videos at allpeoplequilt.com/videos.
To find a quilt shop near you that carries the latest issues of Quilt Sampler and Quilts & More magazines, go to allpeoplequilt.com and click on Find a Shop.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm your host, Pat Sloan, and we have Heather back. How are you, Heather?
Hi. Sorry about that. We had some technical difficulties. No, that's okay.
Yeah. So I was just telling people how they could go to your site and look at the things that your patterns and different things mm-hmm. that are out there. But I wanted to, you know, wrap it up. I didn't want to just drop you off the end of the earth there. One of the great things that you've done is you were the founding person for the Cincinnati chapter of the Modern Quilt Guild. That's a pretty mm-hmm. Pretty amazing task. Was that fun to do?
It was fun. It was a lot of work, but it's very rewarding, and it's great to see how the guild has grown since then.
Oh, and are you still involved with that heavily? I know that you went to the big show earlier this spring called QuiltCon. That was amazing, wasn't it?
That was amazing. Yeah, I'm still involved. I took a year off of being on the board, but I'm back on the board this year as the vice president. So it's fun to be back in service again.
Oh, yeah, back in service, helping out, yes.
Yeah, helping out.
Well, Heather, this has been so much fun to have you on and find out all these new things you're doing, and have a great time teaching.
Thank you. You too. So good to talk to with you.
Okay, bye-bye.
Okay, take care. Bye-bye.
All right, we're going to go right on to my next guest, and Jackie Kunkel of Canton Village Quilt Works is back. Jackie was on before. We just didn't have enough time, and so I asked her to come back on and talk to us more in depth about paper piecing, batiks, and she has a brand new studio she's open, which is where she is teaching classes now. So this is going to be so much fun. Jackie is full of great information. So welcome back to the show, Jackie.
Hey, Pat, how are you?
I am good. I'm so glad you could come back on so we could talk like in more in-depth.
Me too. Thanks for inviting me.
So, you know, I can paper piece, but it is not my go-to thing. You know,
we
it's
have
like
to fix that, Pat.
You know, it's not that thing where I'm like, oh my gosh, I can't wait to paper piece. It's like, okay, yeah. But for you, when did you discover that paper piecing was quite a passion? Because you really do love it.
I do really love it. Well, you know, I don't remember exactly when I was turned on to it, but I know I remember taking a class years ago. I want to say maybe like, I don't know, 15 years ago. And mm-hmm. I think I took my first paper piecing class with Carol Doak.
Okay.
And I really enjoyed it. And I quickly found out that paper piecing is really all about precision.
Mm-hmm.
And for those of us, and I think it was Jenny you were talking to earlier about, you had mentioned something about cutting off points and all.
Right.
when you paper piece, typically you don't do that because everything is precision oriented. Mm-hmm. And so for those of us who are meticulous kind of about that, almost to a fault, which can be good or bad, I guess, paper piecing is a great way to create a quilt that almost, and I say almost, looks flawless, because there's always flaws somewhere, but mm-hmm. it's a great way to do that. And ever since then, I really just love paper piecing. Not to say that I don't piece, you know, traditional piecing, because I do all the time. The quilts that I design for the magazines, none of them are paper piece. So,
oh, okay.
But yeah, paper piecing is definitely my go-to, and I totally enjoy it. So,
you know, I think you're really right with, you know, once you figure it out, everybody makes a really, you know, quote unquote perfect quilt with paper piecing.
Right.
It's pretty difficult to not get it right. You know,
yeah.
It's because then it's just really wrong. It's either right or it's really wrong.
Right.
You know?
That's true.
Yeah, it's sort of not in the middle, like when you're doing regular piecing, where it can be like, oh, it's okay. If you've messed it up with paper piecing, you have to fix it. You just
right.
can't sort of go on. But,
right.
you know, the one thing that I thought would be really fun is if we did sort of maybe, you know, like the top tips for beginners, you know,
Absolutely.
What, you know, the things that, because you teach this a lot, Jackie.
I do.
You have taught so many people. So you've run into all kinds of things that people haven't thought about. And so let's do it. Let's have some top things
right.
that I got beginners.
I've got
all right.
So the method that I actually teach is Judy Niemeyer's method. I'm one of her mm-hmm. national teachers. Some of the tips, a couple tips, if you're a true beginner and have never, ever paper pieced before, one of the best things to do when you start off is to pick something that maybe doesn't have curves in it to start with.
Okay.
This way you're just learning, basically you're learning to sew. If you can sew on a straight line, because you're basically sewing on a line. You don't even have to worry about your quarter inch seam when you're paper piecing, because you're mm-hmm. sewing on a line.
Right. Okay.
So my first piece of advice would be to choose something that maybe doesn't have curves. Second piece of advice is not to choose something terribly big to do, mm-hmm. maybe like a table runner or a wall hanging or something, so that you can get used to that. But one of my best tips is mm-hmm. Is to I just lost my train of thought. Use tools and be organized. Use tools that are going to help you, and really
okay.
be organized and make it a methodical process.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that we do in the paper piecing method that I teach is we don't use a whole heck of a lot of pins. In fact, there's very few times that we use pins at all.
Okay.
So when you're sticking that first piece of fabric down on your paper, mm-hmm. we don't pin it, we glue it.
Because
because pins.
Really?
If you're putting a pin in and yeah. you're using your add a quarter ruler, the ruler mm-hmm. will rock on a pin. Mm-hmm. But if you use a little bit of we use the Uhu glue stick to put that down.
Like crafters use.
Yeah, it's washable glue.
Mm-hmm.
And you put that first piece down, but the paper lays flat, so mm-hmm. you don't have to worry about a ruler rocking on your pin.
Mm-hmm.
And also, in the method that we teach, all your pieces are cut previously to you starting to actually piece. They're all cut oversized, and uh-huh. they're all cut on grain, too, and they all are done through a template layout sheet. So it's really, really a great way to become organized, having everything cut beforehand, and for each unit, you have them in their appropriate. We use Ziploc bags, and we put them in the appropriate. Mm-hmm. So you can work on one unit at a time, and you can actually chain piece it. So it's really kind of a neat method. But the best thing is being organized about it. It just really helps.
Let's talk about this, having the shape to the right size, because I think that that's where a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
me, this is what I do. You know, I don't get the shape that I'm trying to paper piece with correct.
Right.
And so it's too small, you know, and then you have to undo it because that's where it's really wrong. It doesn't cover what it's supposed to cover. Or it's wasting, you know, I'm over, you know, so then I'm compensating the other way.
Correct.
I have this giant shape. How would people deal, like the patterns that you're dealing with here mm-hmm. that you teach from,
mm-hmm.
they have directions that tell you what size to cut
it? Yeah, actually, what we do is you can pretty much cut an entire quilt, like, say, I would say a good, like, twin-size quilt, even a double or a queen-size quilt, pretty much in, like, about 45 minutes, which is kind of crazy, but it's
true.
Holy cow. When you're doing Judy Niemeyer's patterns mm-hmm. using her technique, she has everything printed for you. Your foundation papers are all printed, so you don't have to make copies, and they're all on newsprint. But one of the things that, as far as getting your fabric the size it should be, mm-hmm. she uses what the system is called a template layout sheet. And basically, she's taken all the guesswork out for you.
Mm-hmm.
She tells you ahead of time for whatever pattern you're working on to cut your fabric to a certain size. So say you're working on, there's a unit called Unit H, and it's a quarter circle unit, and there's spikes and then there's backgrounds, and you'll cut your fabric for your background into the rectangular shape that she tells you to cut it, and then you take the template layout sheet and you lay it on top of the stack of fabric. So you might have 12 fabrics stacked up in that rectangular pile. You lay that template layout sheet on top of it, and the template layout sheet is devised of all the different units for the background pieces.
Okay.
So, and she has you then clip each section of the background piece with paperclip, and then you put your ruler down on top, and you slice through, and you cut those sections apart. Thereby having each section already pre-cut
mm-hmm.
and so the size has already been predetermined by her, so you don't actually have to measure it.
Okay, yes.
And they're
That's great.
And they're on grain, too, so mm-hmm. nothing's on the bias either, which is fabulous. So when you're using scraps of fabric, sometimes it could be on the bias or it could not be big enough or something in that nature, so...
Well, what kind of tip do you have? I don't know if all paper piece patterns are written like this. My feeling is they probably aren't.
They're not.
Of course, the people can go online and find a great, maybe a free pattern that they want to do. Yeah, what are some ways we can handle it if we don't get a cutting direction? Because that really makes it worthwhile buying patterns that have it.
Absolutely. So what I would recommend they do, so say they're downloading a pattern online or they're getting it from a book or wherever, what they're going to do is they have to make a copy, obviously, of the paper foundation sheet that they're going to do. What I would do is I would take that foundation sheet, I'd make several copies, and one of them I would actually cut it apart, cut the sections apart, so you have each individual section cut apart.
Okay, so you're making like a template out of
exactly,
the original one.
Exactly, and then you're going to lay it on your fabric, and you're going to cut that shape, but you're going to oversize cut it. So you might cut it a half inch larger than the actual shape. So if the shape was a triangle, you're going to cut it a half, maybe about a half inch larger on every side, or maybe 3/4 inch larger on every side. So you'll get that piece covered when you lay it down on your paper foundation. So that's a great way to go ahead and make that section larger if you don't have the luxury of having something like a template layout sheet.
Yeah, yeah, and it's probably very worth doing that, taking
the time. It's gonna definitely save you from ripping out some of your hairs as well as some of the stitches.
I know, because I think that's really, in my case anyways, is, I mean, do you hear the same thing for your students? Is really the coverage or the waist one of their biggest sort of things they don't like about paper piecing?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And when they learn how to make it so that they can make those pieces oversized, they're a calm sets in and the light bulb goes on and it's great. And everybody's in, you know, quilting heaven at that point.
Yeah. Well, I think that is just like the best thing ever to think of it that way, because I just never have. I never had anybody say that before to me personally. So I had never thought about having a template to cut my shapes before I start the foundation.
Absolutely.
Know,
yeah, because it'll definitely save you the trouble. And if you're working from scraps, it's a great way too, because then you'll know if your scrap is actually large enough.
Yeah. Is there, for printing, you know, is there a particular type of paper that would be better to use that comes off easier?
Absolutely. I totally would not use regular copy paper for a variety of reasons. I would use newsprint. Newsprint is very thin. It tears away very easily. It doesn't get into your machine and, you know,
create
could
dust
potentially
and stuff.
Cause damage, but also too, when you're pressing, you don't have the bulk of a regular copy paper too.
Right.
Regular copy paper is awful to use as far as you know, that's concerned, because it's bulky. So definitely use something on like a newsprint or whatever. But I will give you another tip too.
Oh wait, we'll hold that thought, because we need to take a little break.
Okay.
So when we come back, write it down, and we'll get the other tip from Jackie. And when we come back, we're going to talk about batiks and more. This is so hang on. We'll be right back after the break.
Okay.
Boost your sewing skills from start to finish with daily tips from the editors of American Patchwork and Quilting. Visit tips.allpeoplequilt.com for inspiration.
We're back at the Fall 2012 Moda Fabrics Fashion Show. It's a great show, folks. Don't forget to mind your P's and Q's with Applejack, an alphabet-themed collection by Tim and Beck. Next, we're taking a journey to a whimsical land filled with cute critters, flowers, and sweet confections with Cherry on Top by Keiki. Hallelujah! The muted reds, navies, and creams of Old Glory Gatherings by Primitive Gatherings brings a nostalgic feel to the runway. And now, something for the men in your life. Trails End combines the beauty of fall leaves and wildlife. Stay tuned for more runway reporting and visit your local quilt shop to see these fashionable lines and more from Moda Fabrics.
Here's a special offer just for radio listeners. Get 2 full years of American Patchwork and Quilting delivered right to your door for less than half the cost on the newsstand. You won't miss an issue that's packed with never-before-seen projects from top designers, complete materials lists for all projects, and easy-to-use pull-out patterns and quilting diagrams. Subscribe today online, and you'll also get a free downloadable pattern. Check it out. Go to allpeoplequilt.com.
American Patchwork and Quilting on Pinterest to find ideas for bags, baby projects, pillowcases, storage and organization, and more. Visit Pinterest.com/APQ magazine to join the fun.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm your host, Pat Sloan, and I'm talking with Jackie Kunkel of Canton Village Quilt Works. Her blog is cvquiltworks.blogspot.com, and then from there you can get to her store and all kinds of other things. So, Jackie, what's this other great tip of making us all wait for?
Yes, so don't ever drink anything near your foundation paper, because if you spill it, they shrink. It doesn't matter it doesn't matter what kind of paper you're using. I was paper piecing one day, and I'm a big tea drinker, big tea drinker, and I went to go reach for something, and of course knocked my tea over my foundation sheets, and I thought, well, maybe if I iron them, they'll become flat again. No. It just shrinks them.
I would never have thought that.
Yes.
Oh.
Well, paper is a fiber, so I mean, it makes sense. But I learn from making your own mistakes. But don't drink and paper piece.
Don't drink a paper piece. Don't drink anything.
Right.
Not even water.
Right. Exactly.
Oh my goodness. Okay. So you have another passion, which is batiks.
I love batiks.
You do. You really do. You have a whole store full of them.
I do.
So. Tell me a little bit about why they're your favorite. What does it for you?
Batiks, there's a lot of reasons why I love batiks, and you have some fabulous batiks too, you know, put out from Moda. But anyway, what I really like about batiks, and I know a lot of people shy away from them, and I'm not quite, I never could understand that, but I guess what I like about them is batiks have a lot of color. There's a lot of texture. There's a lot of variation in color, which I really like, because you can get one fabric and you can have so much variation in color and design from that particular batik, and it will go with almost virtually anything. And also, what I like about them is that when you're quilting with batiks, when you're pressing them, they hold a crease fabulously.
They do.
Oh my God, they are fabulous, and they don't seem to stretch as much as like a regular cotton print. So there's less distortion, I think, when you're using batiks and just traditional piecing or paper piecing. I think there's less distortion. So like when you're steaming, if you steam a batik versus like a regular cotton print, I think you get more distortion with a regular cotton print than you would with a batik. You just get a nicer crease with a batik. So there's a lot of reasons why I like to use batik. They're just really fabulous. And plus the fact, I find it really interesting at actually how they're made too. I mean, they're just made in a totally different way.
Right, and that they're, you know, the whole process that, you know, is fascinating, where they're dyed and, you know, they have the waxes, and you might even find that wax on some of the fabrics sometimes, a little bit of dust left
That's
from
true.
Them. Do you mix them, cottons and batiks?
I do. Of course I do. What I like to mix mostly is I like to mix my batiks with K-Facet fabrics.
Oh.
They work very well with K-Facet fabrics.
I see that a lot in your stuff.
I know. Actually, batiks really work well with any fabric. I mix them all the time. And it's interesting when you do mix them with other printed fabrics. A lot of people don't even know that they're a batik.
Right.
So,
right. I do it a lot, too. And people are like, oh, you can't mix them. I'm not sure where that started, not mixing thing. But
They're both cotton.
Yeah. Yeah. Get everybody out of that mode.
Absolutely. Yes. Go batiks.
Yes. Go mix. I want to talk about your studio that you opened because it's quite unique. You didn't open a store. You have a store online.
Yeah.
But you didn't open a physical store. You opened a studio where you're teaching.
Correct.
So tell me what prompted you to do that.
Well, Several things. One of the things is I love to teach, but I wanted to have a place that I could actually call my own, and I wanted it to reflect me and what I do. I wanted to have huge design walls on the walls for all the students that come, so that they have a place to put what they're making. Mm-hmm. And that's been well received. They really, really like that. And it's a place for me to go to versus, you know, renting, you know, an entire shop and moving completely in there. I'm only there when I'm teaching or mm-hmm. when we have an open sew day, because I do travel to teach. So when that's my home based,
right.
Teaching studio.
Right.
And, it just worked for me. I couldn't find a place where I could, you know, rent periodically to mm-hmm. just teach. It was very difficult, and I don't know if you find it that the same way where you are. But, you know, just to have a place where if I wanted to do a class every so often, there just wasn't anything available. And then I found this place. It's actually in an old converted mill. They used to actually, they used to actually make hosiery years ago. They used to sew in this mill, but it's comprised.
How neat.
I know. So we're kind of bringing it back. But there's 44 different artisans in this building. They've converted it specifically mm-hmm. for artisans. There's photographers, potters, jewelers, quilters, weavers. It's a fantastic place. And you can rent, you know, there's different size studios. And mm-hmm. when I saw the one I liked, I was like, this is perfect. Mm-hmm. And it's really been a great place.
Did you move your long arm there? Because you're a long armer forever.
No. My long arm is still here, and it's staying here.
Yeah, okay.
It's staying here.
Because
but
you
no,
wouldn't be able, my, you'd have to go to there, the place.
Yeah,
to,
I would. My studio is, as I've devoted it strictly to classes, and for now anyway, I can fit up to 13 people there, and they each have their own table, and they have nice chairs to sit on, and they have the design walls and ironing boards and cutting stations, and my one of my bestest friends, Justine, she has been lobbying, and she got it. She got a little refrigerator there, and she's got it. And now they're lobbying for a microwave too. So.
Oh. Don't you love when they tell you what you need?
Quilters need to eat.
That's right. They need all the conveniences. And on your site, your blog, you are often showing your classes, your students' mm-hmm. work, and what you do when you travel to teach. Where can they contact you for info on your classes?
They can the classes that are run here in my home studio, they can go to my website, my online shop, and I have a category that says classes, and they can register right online for the classes that are here in my studio. For my other classes where I'm traveling, they mm-hmm. can find that schedule in several places. They can find that on my blog under schedule. They can find that on my shop also under schedule. And also, if I'm teaching a Judy Niemeyer technique, they can also find it on her website.
Okay.
Under my, they click on me, and then they'll find my schedule as well there. So many, many different places. And on Facebook, they can always get me on Facebook too.
Right. And you're at cvquiltworks.com. That's what one of the lectures you do is called Quilting Online.
Yes.
Tell me a little bit about that. We have a few minutes here for the end of the show.
Well, like you, I've been online, it seems like forever.
Mm-hmm. Since it was created. We were on here when they created the internet. Jackie and I got on. Yep. Found us.
I mean, it's just Quilting Online, the lecture kind of goes over the different platforms that are online, such as mm-hmm. blogging and Facebook and Flickr and Pinterest and Craftsy and all these great places that quilters can meet up. Mm-hmm. And you can do quilting bees, or you can get involved in free blocks of the month or tutorials. But it's a great way to hook up with other quilters. If you have a hard time getting out to, say, like a classroom or getting out to a traditional quilt guild, it's a great format for quilters who, you know, are on the run.
Right.
Or,
and like Jenny said, that's where she learned to quilt, was from the internet.
Absolutely. There's a lot of people I know that have learned that way, which is fabulous. In this day and age, I mean, it's a great format.
And so do when you get done with that, are people like, wow, I didn't know, you know, all that stuff was available?
There are. There are quite a few that don't know that it's out there, and or at least to what extent that it's out there.
Right.
You know, it's just a matter of, like, you and I, you know, we, because of what we do spend a lot of time online, so we do know what's out there. And, you know, if you start spending a little more time online, you do find these little outlets. And mm-hmm. oftentimes you'll find something that intrigues you, and you stick
right.
with it. And
right.
it's a great way.
Yeah, and it, what I find is that, you know, people say to me, oh, well, you're everywhere. It's like, well, not really. I mean, I might seem that way, but there's way
right.
lots more that I'm not doing. But I have to go where my customers are. And
exactly.
that doesn't mean that the average quilter has to be in five different places.
Exactly.
You know, they just go, like you said, go where what the conversation speaks to you, the community speaks to you. They do the type of work you like to do.
Exactly. Exactly. And I hear the same thing, you know, you're everywhere. But and like you said, not really. You're where you feel you're in your comfort zone, and you're relating to quilters that are like you.
Mm-hmm.
And there's just a lot, and you meet so many people. I mean, you do. I mean,
yeah,
not
it's
only
incredible.
It is. And when you do actually get out there to the quilt shows and such, mm-hmm. you actually meet some of these people face to face, and they're phenomenal people, talented individuals, and mm-hmm. usually very gracious and just wonderful, wonderful people.
Yeah, that's the best part, is that when you're, like, I was in QuiltCon earlier this year, and mm-hmm. a lady stopped me, first her friend stopped me to tell me that I needed to meet her friend, and the lady who I needed to meet actually had been on a Second Life, which is a virtual world community where I had a quilt group for a long time, mm-hmm. and, you know, that I was meeting, that's the first person I'd ever met, besides Alex Verinelli of Aurifil Thread, who'd been
right.
in that community. So it was fantastic.
Yeah. Isn't that fun?
Yeah. Well, Jackie, this has been absolutely great. Thank
well,
you for
I
all
think
this
thank
paper
you.
Piecing advice.
Pat, we need to get you together. We need to get you up here. When you come up here,
yes.
you'll need to come to my studio, and we'll sit you down, and we'll
okay.
walk through the steps.
Okay. I'll get the
remedial
class. I know
I keep saying
class.
That, but we need to
yeah.
do that.
Okay. Thank you so much, Jackie.
All right, Pat. You have a great day.
This is American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. Visit us at allpeoplequilt.com, and we'll see you next week with an all-new show.
To visit allpeoplequilt.com for more information on topics from today's show, as well as how-to videos, free printable patterns, and additional tips and techniques.